Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Frankfurt, Germany, and earned medical and doctorate degrees from the Phillips University School of Medicine. He's a world-renowned thoracic oncologist who has spent his career researching risks, progression, treatments, and outcomes related to lung cancer. He's held a number of key leadership positions at H. Lee Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa, and 1 year ago became the president and CEO of the Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute. His name, Dr. Gerald Bepler. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with the president and CEO of the Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute, Dr. Gerald Bepler. Doctor, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you very much.
Can we start by talking about your mom and your dad and growing up in Germany?
Yes, of course. So I grew up in a town called Gießen, which is about 40 miles north of Frankfurt. And this town is known for Dr. Röntgen, actually, that invented the Röntgen ray, the X-rays. So this is the town where I grew up in. And my dream always was to become a musician. So I actually studied keyboards, piano, and organ. And so that's how I grew up.
You still play?
I do play every once in a while, yes. I really haven't played seriously in about 35 years, but I have a piano at home and I play piano.
It's very relaxing.
It absolutely is, correctly.
What's the biggest thing, Doctor, you learned from your mom? And what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
I think the biggest thing I learned from my dad is being dedicated to what you're doing and taking your job serious and sticking to it and following through on what you promised. And I think what I learned from my mother is loyalty and compassion.
If we went back to the kids that you went to grade school with, would they have predicted that you'd become a world-renowned thoracic oncologist?
I don't think so. I think at that time we were probably not thinking about our future career so much in terms of what profession we would have.
Looking back, what's been the advantages of growing up in Germany?
I think the advantages of having grown up in Germany is because the society is tighter knit than it is here in the United States, is my impression. So you interact more with family and relatives, and because people live in much closer quarters, so you have to probably do with less and establish a social network.
When did you decide, Dr. Bepler, that you wanted to be a doctor?
That's a bit difficult to answer. I think if I think back, the first time that I would probably have thought about being a physician was when I was in fifth grade, I think. And the trigger for this was that I had an appendicitis and was admitted to a hospital and had an appendectomy. And, of course, this has a huge impact on a young child. And I was fascinated with the work that doctors and nurses do in the hospital and how they take care of sick people and how they can help sick people.
You've had a tremendous number of years of education.
Yes.
And in today's world, there's a saying that you have to keep earning while you're learning. Talk to us, if you will, about ongoing education in the world today.
Well, I think the key thing to driving society forward in the future is to have extremely well-educated and well-rounded people. So I would say that it's important to have a spectrum of knowledge, to not just be focused on one individual thing. So, for example, not to just be focused on medicine, but also to know literature and to know arts and to be well-rounded in your education overall. Because I think what you do learn by knowing about other fields is that that you can bring richer thoughts and a richer environment to what you actually do. So, for example, as a physician, one of the key things is to really understand the patient, and not just the patient, but also the family and the social setting, so that you can adjust what you, the way you communicate with the patient, to the needs at hand, rather than to the only the technicalities of having a disease and how you treat a disease, because you treat the patient and the family as a whole.
You went to Philips University School for Medicine,
yes,
in Marburg, Germany.
Correct.
So you were in the German university system. Mm-hmm. Then later you came here at Duke, one of our premier institutions.
Right.
How do they differ?
When I came to Duke University, the difference between Duke University and a university in Germany is actually not that big. They're quite similar in structure, meaning you have professors that give lectures and they teach you. I would say the main difference that I've experienced between the United States universities and the European universities is that the United States universities are more practically oriented and the European universities are probably still more theoretically oriented. So the main difference that I've experienced between the German system and the United States system is, so in the European system, it still is more frontal lectures and learning by book and having relatively little hands-on experience with patients, while the U.S. system de-emphasizes this theoretical piece more and more and emphasizes the practical piece more and more. So as a medical student in the United States, you get hands-on experience with patients very early on and you have to learn how to deal with patients.
I think another difference is at Phillips, they didn't have the maniacs, the Duke maniacs in basketball like they do.
Oh, absolutely right.
Coach K. So, we're talking to Dr. Gerald Bepler. When we come back, we're going to ask him, what's cancer? He's the thoracic oncologist for Camanos Cancer Institute. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Gerald Bepler, who has received $24 million in research funding from the National Cancer Institute. That's impressive. That's impressive. Doctor, what's cancer?
Cancer is a disease that arises out of a person's own body and own body cells. So it is really not something that you would usually think of a disease as, like you think of an infection being a disease, or you think of breaking a bone and having a disease, or having a heart attack and having a disease. So cancer is something that slowly arises in a person's own body as a result of a dysregulation of a normal cellular process. So what I mean with this is normally cells in your body grow and then stop growing. And if you have an injury, cells start growing again, fill in the injury, and then stop growing and do their normal, go along their normal way, whatever the normal function is. Now, when cancer occurs, this process of the cell stopping to grow when it needs to stop growing is disrupted. So the cell doesn't know that it should stop growing, and it just keeps going and keeps going and keeps going. And as a result of this, leads to destruction of other organs around it and ultimately causes significant problems for the person that has the disease.
50 years ago, when I was very young, it seems I never heard of the word cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our grandparents were old at 55 and 60,
that's
and they
correct,
died,
right.
But why so much cancer today, doctor?
Well, you touched on the exact right spot, and that is that as people get older, the likelihood of a person getting cancer increases. So meaning if the average life expectancy for a population would be 50 years, then the number of people that during the 50-year time span would contract cancer is much lower than now. Now the life expectancy is somewhere between 80 and 85, And so the chance of a person to get cancer over an 80 to 85 year lifespan is much higher than it is over a 50 year lifespan. So as a result, now we see many more cancers, and that's something that we have learned how to detect the disease also earlier. So that's another trigger. So if you, for example, if you go and you screen for cancer, you find cancer earlier in a person's life than if you waited until they had disease. So that's another reason why we find some cancers nowadays that otherwise we may have never found before.
You hear and you meet vibrant young women, professional women, healthy, right, full of life, 25, and they get breast cancer.
Yes.
How?
Well, there's different causes for cancer and for breast cancer. So number one, there is a inheritance pattern for most cancers, particularly for breast cancer, that we know about. So there are families where the risk to get breast cancer is very high. And so women can get breast cancer at a younger age because this process of cells becoming abnormal and keeping growing starts at an earlier life, at an earlier age, and the cell does not have the normal function to stop this process. And there's genes that are, in this particular case for breast cancer, we're talking about a gene called BRCA1, and there's another gene, BRCA2. So if a woman has an abnormality in this gene, the risk over a lifetime to contract breast cancer is close to 100%.
What role do our foods today play in cancer?
I could answer this probably best by telling you how different cancers have changed over the last decades. So for example, in the 1950s and 1960s, gastric cancers were much more prominent, cancers arising from the stomach, that is, and they have clearly declined over time. And one of the reasons that researchers believe cancers have declined, stomach cancer has declined, is because we are not pickling food anymore the way we pork and beef the way we were doing it. So we are preserving food in different ways. So that's probably why there is a decline in stomach cancer. On the other side, other cancers probably have increased because of changes in our diet. So we do know, for example, that there is an association between obesity and cancer, between obesity and diabetes. So I think what fatty tissue does, fatty tissue acts as a storage component, not just for fat and energy, but also for potential toxins that get in the body. And so as a result, long-term exposure to toxins that in a lean person might not lead to disease, in a obese person might lead to disease because there's a higher concentration of these toxins in the body.
Dr. Pepler, what do you say to a listener tonight who's just heard these words from a doctor? You've got cancer.
Well, I think the first and most important message is that there is hope. In the past, hearing the word cancer was really, for most people, equivalent to a death sentence. And nowadays, this is clearly not the case anymore. Most people with cancer, we can actually cure. So if we, for example, detect breast cancer in an early stage, the cure rate for breast cancer is 90%. If we detect lung cancer in an early stage, the cure rate for lung cancer is 60%. If we detect prostate cancer in an early stage, the cure rate for prostate cancer is near 100%. So all this in the past was not possible. So meaning we now have the means to treat cancer effectively in such a way that the person walks away after the treatment from cancer and is actually cured from that disease.
You're a world-renowned thoracic oncologist who has spent your career researching the risk, progression, treatments, and outcomes related to lung cancer. Why did you select lung cancer as your life's mission?
I selected lung cancer as my life's mission because lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death in this country and in the Western world. In fact, if you look at all cancer death causes, 25% are a result of lung cancer. So lung cancer is, in fact, does kill more women than breast cancer does. So there is a very clear need that we have to make substantial progress in lung cancer. The more progress and the faster we make progress in lung cancer, the more progress and the faster we make progress for all cancers globally.
Actually, your specialty is the treatment of non-small cell lung cancer.
Right.
What's the difference?
Well, the difference is that there are just different types of lung cancer. And that comes from a pathologist looking under the microscope and looking at the cells that comprise the lung cancer. And as the word says, small cell lung cancer consists of relatively small cells, and the other types of lung cancers are globally called non-small cell lung cancer. And most lung cancers, 85%, are non-small cell lung cancers. It's the overwhelming number of lung cancers.
You've written a lot of articles, a lot of papers. Back in March of 2008, in the Tampa Tribune, you wrote an article entitled "The War on Lung Cancer Needs Volunteers." If I got lung cancer, doctor, I don't want no volunteer working on me. What was that article about?
That article was really about raising awareness to the need that if patients get diagnosed with cancer, in particular with lung cancer, that they should participate as volunteers in clinical trials. Meaning that the only way we can make progress in cancer is for us to be able to study the disease better and develop new therapies. And the only way we can develop a new therapy is by people to participate in a clinical trial.
What do you say to a person who says, I've never smoked, I've never really been around a smoker, and I've got lung cancer? Mm-hmm. My friend has smoked since he was 14 years old, three packs a day. The guy's 60, no lung cancer. Mm-hmm. There's no God.
Well, I think that's an absolutely correct observation. So there are definitely are people that have smoked 80 years of their life and don't get lung cancer, and there's others that never smoked and get lung cancer at age 24. Now, saying this does not mean that it's okay to smoke. Smoking is clearly the number one risk factor for lung cancer. So a person that smokes has a tenfold higher risk to get lung cancer than a person that doesn't smoke. But it doesn't guarantee that if you do smoke, you get lung cancer. Neither does it guarantee you don't get lung cancer if you don't smoke. It just is playing the odds.
We're talking to Dr. Gerald Bepler, who holds 7 patents. I don't know where you keep 7 patents, but I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now, back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Dr. Gerald Bepler of the Karmanos Cancer Institute. Doctor, we mentioned 7 patents. Mm-hmm. Where does Tracy, your wife, keep those 7 patents?
I have to ask her. She probably keeps it in a stocking under the pillow. She doesn't keep the patents. I actually have them in a drawer.
Okay. For 10 years, you guys lived in Tampa.
Yes, sir.
And you held various leadership positions at the Moffitt Cancer Center. Tell us about your time in Tampa.
In my time in Tampa, I was the department chairman of thoracic oncology at the Moffitt Cancer Center. And I was developing what's called a translational research program for lung cancer, meaning the goal was to get a large grant from the National Cancer Institute to study how one could move new discoveries in the laboratory faster to patient care. And those grants are called SPORE grants, and there are about 60 in the country at the present time, and so we were successful to get one of those SPORE grants for lung cancer to Tampa.
They're playing baseball right now in Tampa, you know, Lakeland everywhere. It's probably 80 degrees today.
That's correct.
We got more snow again today. After 10 years, you tell Tracy, honey, were coming to Detroit. Why did you leave Moffitt and decide to become the president and CEO of Karmanos Cancer Institute?
The main reason is that the Karmanos Cancer Institute is really a flagship cancer center in this country and has been at the cutting edge for developing new therapies for cancer treatment for the last 40, 50 years. So the Karmanos Cancer Institute initially was known under different names. It was called the Michigan Cancer Foundation, and really ultimately changed its name to the Karmanos Cancer Institute in 1995 because of a generous gift from Peter Karmanos and his family. And ever since the existence of the Karmanos Cancer Institute, the Institute has really developed new treatments for cancer patients and has led the way to develop new so-called standard of cares, meaning treatments that are nowadays accepted as the standard for cancer patients, but 20 years ago were considered totally revolutionary and out-of-the-box thinking. And so it's an institute that has an extremely high reputation, fabulous researchers, great clinicians, and all the potential to keep developing new treatments for the future.
It's one of only 40 National Cancer Institute designated comprehensive cancer centers in America. $216 million budget, 6,000 patients a year, 700 cancer-specific scientific investigation programs and clinical trials, 1,000 employees that you lead, including 300 physicians.
Yes.
That's like herding cats, 300 physicians.
That's correct.
But don't go there. Don't go there. What's been the biggest surprise about Karmanos in this year you've been with us?
I would say the biggest surprise to me has been how strong the support from the community for the Karmanos Cancer Center is. So if, of course, if you think, why would you move from Tampa, Florida to Detroit, Michigan? And I think you probably try to allude to the fact that the economy in Michigan is not doing very well and that the car industry was significantly depressed. So why would you move from Tampa to Detroit? And so one of my really biggest surprises has been how strong the support from the community is for this cancer center and how much people in the community really recognize and cherish what this cancer center is doing for the population at large. So the Karmanos Cancer Institute does not turn any patient away, whether they're insured or not. And in fact, we see approximately 25% of the patients that walk through our door have no insurance. That is, on average, 5 times higher than any other cancer institute in this country. And I think what this shows is the commitment of this institute to the community, and in turn, the community supports the cancer center to take care of these patients. And I think this is a very unique situation in this country.
What's your vision for the future of the Karmanos, the Barbara Ann Karmanos, that was Pete's late wife, great lady. What's your vision of the future?
My vision for the future is that we will, number one, continue to develop the next generation of therapies for cancer patients. So at the present time, I just would like to back up on this. Have we done this in the past? And I think absolutely yes. So for example, if you go back and look at new drugs that have been FDA approved in the last 5 years for cancer therapy, that's a total of 32. Of these 32 drugs that have been FDA approved in the last 5 years, 15 have come through the Karmanos Cancer Institute. So what this means that in effect, patients coming to the Karmanos Cancer Institute have access to the next generation of cancer drugs, possibly 10 years before they actually get FDA approval. And this is one of our strongest programs that we have. In addition, we are focused on cancer communication. And again, the reason for this is that a large portion of patients that we see are undereducated and probably have a hard time understanding what we are asking of them when they come to the Karmanos Cancer Institute from a point of view of participating in research, explaining how drugs work, explaining how diagnostics work. So we have developed a program where we videotape the interaction between patients and physicians so that we can then go back and talk to the physicians to teach them how to better communicators, how to talk to patients and to their family members in such a way that the family members actually understand what is being said to them.
You know, you're very comfortable with a microphone, doctor.
Thank you.
Oprah found this Dr. Oz a few years ago, and now he's famous. He's got his own show. Maybe if Oprah finds you someday, there could be the Dr. Gerald Bepler show. The new Mr. Oz. Okay. In all seriousness, what have these cancer patients and survivors taught you, Dr. Bepler, about life?
The most important thing is to really cherish what you have at the present time and to appreciate your family and to be content with what you have. I think the cancer patients that come to me and come to us at the Karmanos Cancer Institute, the first thing that, again, that people hear when they hear the word cancer is that they think everything is over. And after discussing treatment options and seeing that there is hope, oftentimes what you see is the patient and husband, wife, daughter, sons, families really pull together and think about what has been important for them during their entire life and what do they really appreciate about their mom or their dad that's just been diagnosed with cancer. So I think what this has taught me is to really cherish what I have.
Once in a while you treat somebody 2 years old, 5 years old, 10 years old, a young child with cancer. What do those young angels teach you about life?
I think children have a totally different perspective on this. And when children are diagnosed with cancer, I think the person that's hardest hit with this diagnosis is actually the parents rather than the child. Children are easier going from a point of view of accepting a diagnosis and making the best out of it. So meaning continuing their life and living with it the way it is, rather than adults tend to, I think more about the consequences of this and what this possibly, what impact this will have, their disease will have on others. And so one of my experience with this has always been that it's easier to talk to patients about their disease than it is with family members about the patient's disease.
We're talking to Dr. Gerald Bepler, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Dr. Gerald Bepler, who a year ago became the president and CEO of the Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute. Doctor, I've heard and read a lot about humor and recovery going side by side. Is it true that humor is very helpful in recovery of a major disease? And if so, why?
I think humor is inspiring. I think humor speaks for having a lot of spirit. I think humor is invigorating. And so I think as a result of this, if you are ill and if you are sick and if you feel down, that if you can appreciate humor, that it actually gives you spiritual strength and helps you build up your body. You drink more fluid, you eat more food, you're a better communicator, you're a better companion, and I think that ultimately helps build up your strength.
You don't look like it, but you've spent 30 years on the treatment of cancer. You look like you're 30 years old.
Thank you.
I'm jealous. How has the treatment of cancer changed in the 30 years that you've focused your life on this mission?
I think it really has given me a very clear focus on trying to understand how we can use science better to really ultimately cure this disease. It's a very complex disease that we're dealing with. It's as I said in the beginning, the disease is really arises out of a person's own body. So the difference between the actual cells that make up the cancer and the person that is afflicted by the disease is not that much, which is exactly what the challenge is in trying to find effective treatment for the disease. So I think what this has really done is emphasize to me that without further research and without further investigation into what makes cancer tick, we really can't ultimately overcome this disease.
Why haven't we, Dr. Bepler, been able to find a cure, the cure, and most importantly, will we?
I think the answer to the last question is absolutely we will. I have totally no doubt on this. And the reason is because over the last 15 years, I would say, we have made very substantial progress in cancer. And the most important thing to understand is cancer isn't one disease. Cancer is a whole myriad of different diseases from a molecular perspective. So let me give you one example. The disease chronic myelogenous leukemia, CML, as it's referred to, afflicts about 4,000 to 4,500 people in the United States every year. It's a disease that people get when they are sort of in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. So when they are in the prime of their life. 10 years ago, the chance to be alive 5 years from diagnosis was 25%. And that was even with the most aggressive forms of therapy, including bone marrow transplantation and high-dose chemotherapy. In the meantime, scientists have figured out what the molecular abnormality is that drives this disease, and a new drug has been developed to specifically target this molecular abnormality. And now the five-year survival for this disease is 90%, with taking a pill, one pill, once a day. So no other chemotherapy, you're back to normal life within weeks of being diagnosed. And so this is what I would call a miracle. And there are other diseases, other types of cancers now where we have made similar progress. So there are many different types of cancers that all have different molecular signatures or parameters that define the disease. And we can develop drugs that specifically treat that pocket of disease.
17 years ago, you've been honored many, many times, but 17 years ago, you were awarded the first Jimmy V to be the recipient down in Duke. Tell us about that and Jimmy V.
Yeah, well, that was a great honor, I have to say. So Jimmy V was a basketball coach for NC State, and he won the NCAA championship with NC State University. And then went on to be the basketball announcer for ESPN. And years later, he was diagnosed with cancer, and he was treated at multiple different places, including Duke University. And he was a very inspirational person. And one of his main slogans really was, never give up. And so as a result, the Jimmy V Foundation was started with the thought to raise money for young investigators in the field of cancer to give them the opportunity to really develop a career and be successful in cancer research. So when a young physician or a young scientist starts in cancer research, the first 3 to 4 years are really the hardest years, because during that time period you have to develop your own research program, apply for grant funding, and you're competing with established investigators at the time. So you really have to do very good work in order to move forward. And many people never move forward. And so the charge of the Jimmy V Foundation really was to raise sufficient funds to allow young investigators to be successful.
I don't know if you know it, but Dick Vitale, yeah, who lives in Orlando, was the sidekick on ESPN.
That's right.
He coached University of Detroit college team.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And he was the Pistons coach for only like 20 games.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. He's a lot more successful on the ESPN than he was as
right,
the coach.
Right.
Great, great man.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great man. You've been in Southeast Michigan now for a year,
mm-hmm.
you and Tracy. When you were coming here, your friends would, they probably wanted to send you back to Duke to be examined. What are you doing leaving Tampa with that beautiful blue sky? You know, you're in a convertible over the Howard Franklin, beautiful. And you come to this Southeast Michigan. What would you tell those people now about Southeast Michigan?
I've been...
Other than come visit in the summer.
No, I have to say I've been extremely impressed by the community here. We've also lived in Buffalo, New York before. I have to add that to this. So one of our biggest worries was that moving up north, quote north, would mean that we would have overcast days and no sunshine at all. And in fact, there's lots of sunshine in Michigan. So the weather is really spectacular, in fact, in Michigan. I think, you know, the fall was fabulous. In fact, my kids love the snow. And one of the first things they said is, why did we never get to go to the snow? So I think it's been a great experience, and I have totally no regrets at all. Great communities.
Speaking of kids, as our time ends winds down this evening, what advice, Dr. Bepler, would you give to the young people listening tonight?
The most important thing is to be true to yourself. So to have principles, to work hard at what you're doing, to make sure that you do understand how to read, that you do understand how to do math, that you do understand science, and you get an appreciation for arts and music. So I think you have to really look for a well-rounded education and be true to your own principles. And don't try to take shortcuts, because they never work.
Dr. Bepler, God sent us the Bepler family to Southeast Michigan. Thanks a million for coming. Thanks for all you've done in this year and all you do for the future. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you very much.
Honor to have you.
Pleasure.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible.
Believe in yourself.